welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and coming up in this hour adventure, we'll hear circus drama and intrigue on the Clyde Beatty Show later on. Right now, it's Dangerous Assignment. Lloyd Burrell stars in the syndicated recording first heard with screen actor Brian Dunleavy on February 11th, 1953 on NBC. Steve Mitchell off to the Belgian Congo in the episode next.
Baghdad, Martinique, Singapore, at all the places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though. Trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to prove that sometimes the best way to stop one fight is to start another one. Hello, commissioner. Didn't know you were back.
Yeah, I'm not really, Steve. I'll be off again in a day or so. Deputy will be carrying on in my place, but I'm giving him a rest this morning.
Fine. What have you got for me?
Steve, I don't think you're going to like this assignment.
Break it to me gently, then. What am I supposed to do?
Step in the middle of a fight between two women?
Oh, brother. Anything but that, Commissioner.
Well, it's vitally important we patch up a family squabble, Steve. Because of a lease our government has, or had, I should say, on a certain strategic mining property in the Belgian Congo.
What's the trouble?
Well, that lease expired a month ago. We've been trying to get the owners of the property together so we could negotiate another lease. But it seems the ladies aren't on speaking terms.
That sounds just peachy for me.
One is the widow of Aristide Bergerot, the original owner. The other is Bergerot's sister. These two women now own the mining property jointly.
What are they fighting about, Commissioner?
Who knows? Whatever it is, it's caused a serious breach between them. We've been informed there's a lawsuit in the offing.
Oh, great. Nothing like a lawsuit to tie up an estate.
And meanwhile, the mine remains idle. We need those strategic minerals desperately, Steve.
Look, Commissioner, you think this whole affair could be a stall of some kind?
Oh, it's quite possible, Steve. New form of sabotage, you might call it. Somebody could have engineered this feud to keep us from working the mine.
Either woman could be involved in the setup, or both for that matter.
I'm not quite convinced of that, Steve, but get down to the Congo, to the Bergerot Estate in Leopoldville, and find out what this is all about. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Down to the Belgian Congo and see if I can patch up a quarrel that stands in the way of our renewing a lease on a vitally important hunk of mining property. It's late Friday afternoon when my plane lands. Greg Carlson of the consulate in Leopoldville is there to meet me. We pile into his car and head out for the Bergerot Estate.
I'm certainly glad to see you, Steve. Maybe you can get this mess straightened out.
What started this feud, do you know?
Yeah. A chapeau. A frilly little bonnet.
What happened?
It turned out to be a favorite hat of Mamselle's, that's Bergerot's sister, and Toto massacred it.
Toto?
A French poodle. He belongs to Madame, that's Bergerot's widow.
So a dog chews up a hat, and away we go, huh?
One thing led to another, and Wango, a lawsuit is born.
Because of the hat?
No, that happened a long time ago. Since then, there have been rumors and insinuations, all spread around by both camps. Want to hear the latest words?
Sure.
There seems to be some question as to the widow's claim to her half of the Bergerot estate.
What?
Mademoiselle's friends seem to think that maybe Madame is a phony. That Aristide Bergerot never married.
Do they have any proof of this?
No, but here's the way the story goes. The widow claims that she and Bergerot were married in a small Belgian town during the early part of the war. He was a flyer, got himself killed in a crash shortly afterwards.
There must be a record of the marriage.
No, the town hall and the files were destroyed in an air raid.
Doesn't the widow have a marriage license?
No.
Great.
That is, she did have one, but it's been misplaced. Interesting, huh?
Very.
So the battle rages. Now they've started in on Henri.
And just who is Henri?
Oh, he's on the widow's team. You might call him her boyfriend. She met him a couple of months ago. Nice sort of guy, but gossip says he's a fortune hunter. That he made a play for Mademoiselle and she turned him down. Madame caught him on the rebound. Oh, the talk that goes on.
Tsk, tsk, tsk. About this lawsuit, Greg, how far has that progressed?
Hasn't reached the courts yet, and it won't if Van Leuven has anything to say about it. He's the family lawyer.
You handling the case?
Like a hot potato. Poor guy's on the spot, right in the middle of everything. He doesn't know what to do.
If he goes through with the case, Mademoiselle gets sore. If he doesn't, Madame blows the top, huh?
Yeah. There's the entrance to the estate up ahead, Steve. Big gates on the left.
It looks like quite a layout.
It is. Everything but gold doorknobs. Wonder where the gatekeeper is.
Is it locked?
Not usually.
Allow me.
Okay, Greg.
Come ahead.
Hold it, Steve.
Huh?
Car coming down from the house.
Yeah, at a good clip, too.
Looks like Henri's car.
Oh, boy. She better slow down or she isn't going to make that curve.
Yeah, she's right. Hey, she isn't going to make it. Hold it, hold it!
Come on, Greg.
Well, what do you know? A widow herself.
She always drives like that.
So I understand. A real fiend on the road.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah. Hey, can you get in on that side, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. If I can force this door open.
There. She okay?
Hot cold. Must have banged her head against the wheel.
Steve, the car's caught fire.
Come on, let's get her out of here.
Easy. Easy now. What's that broken glass, Steve?
Okay, okay. Hold this door open, will you?
Yeah. Got her?
Yeah.
I'll give you a hand.
I can manage. Come on, let's get out of here before this jalopy blows sky high.
How is she, Mr. Van Leuven?
She has regained consciousness. The doctor says she will be all right. A few bruises, nothing more.
I'm glad to hear that. Oh, this is Steve Mitchell.
Ah, Monsieur Michel. How do you do?
Mr. Van Leuven.
Most fortunate it was that you and Monsieur Carlson arrived at the scene of the accident as quickly as you did. Foolish, foolish girl. She drives like a maniac.
Yeah, she really tore out of the place. Where was she going in such a hurry?
Into town, I suppose.
And she wasn't staying around for our meeting, huh?
No. When she learned of your coming, she made it quite clear to me that she would not discuss the lease until the matter of her right to the estate was settled.
I'd like to talk with Mademoiselle Bergerot, the sister. Is she around?
She was to be here. I myself talked with her on the telephone last night and arranged it. But this morning, I learned she was gone.
Gone? Where?
Oh, on another of her hunting trips into the jungle.
Oh, fine. When do you expect her back?
Who knows, monsieur?
About this lawsuit.
Idiotic, sheer nonsense, monsieur, monsieur. And I have told Madame Bergerot so. Still, Madame insists.
I see. One more thing. Did Madame say anything about the accident? Has she suddenly lost control of this Henri's car?
Oh, she admitted traveling at high speed, and then the car swerved. That is all she remembers.
Okay, Mr. Van Leuven, thanks.
Now, if you will excuse me.
Sure.
Yeah, well, Steve, looks like you're off to a great start. Madame refuses to talk to you, and Mademoiselle slips away into the jungle. What do we do now?
I'd like to have another look at the scene of that accident. Come on.
Find anything, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. Come here.
look at this.
Steering rod, huh?
Uh-huh. Look at this brake here. A little too clean cut.
Might have been worked over with a hacksaw.
Yeah. Tell me, Greg, how far is the Bergerot hunting lodge from here?
Inland, about 80 miles. Why?
I think I'll run up there and have a talk with Manziel.
A river steamer can get you to San Carlos by morning. We can just about make it if we leave right now. It's an old paddle wheeler.
Let's go. Shortly after dark, we pull up to the steamship office. I get myself a ticket to St. Carew, and then I walk out on the dock to where Greg is waiting.
All set, Steve?
Yeah.
Gangway's over here. Sure you don't want me to come along?
Well, you better stick here in town and keep an eye on things. Hey, it might be a good idea to contact Madame's doctor and have him put a nurse on the case, just so she'll have someone around. Whoever tried once might try again.
Right, I'll take care of... Uh-oh.
Well, 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 Monsieur Casson. This is a surprise.
Hello, Henri. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. Taking a little trip, huh?
No, I was just seeing a friend of mine off. Steve Mitchell, Henri Aubert.
Oh, a pleasure, monsieur.
Mr. Aubert, you going aboard, too?
Yes, it's a little pleasure trip. I like to get away on occasions, you know. I find the river journey most relaxing. Oh, we better hurry, monsieur, Michel.
All right.
Goodbye, Monsieur Casson.
Have a good trip.
So that's Henri Aubert. Madame's boyfriend, huh?
Yeah. I wonder what he's up to.
A pleasure trip, he said. Well, I better shove off. See you when I get back, Greg.
Yeah. And take care, Steve.
Later, I'm parked in a deck chair as the steamer pulls out into the river and the lights of Leopoldville fade away into the night behind us. I wait there for about half an hour, hoping friend Henri will stroll by, but he doesn't. I want to talk to Henri, so I decide to go look for him. I walk around the deck. It's pretty deserted. I'm still walking. Looking for Henri when somebody suddenly darts out of it.
The sudden impact throws me against the rail. I try to grab the carriage who wrestles at me, but I'm off balance. He grabs me instead, and before I can take the cobwebs out of my brain, I'm overboard.
When I pop up to the surface of the water again, I see the boat sliding by me in the night. Then I realize I'm being drawn in toward one of the giant paddle wheels. I try to swim away, but the suction's too strong for me. And finally, I drift close to the side, double up my legs, and kick out. It shoots me out far enough so the wheel clears me by a foot. Now a couple of the passengers spot me floundering around in the water. Pretty soon, somebody tosses me a line and holds me up by the day.
It is Monsieur Michel.
Oh. Huh? Oh. Henri.
Here. Give me your hand.
Thanks.
You had a very precious gift.
You're telling me. Good thing someone spotted me and tossed the rope.
What happened?
I got shoved overboard.
What's that? Who did it?
That's a good question, Henri.
Monsieur, I suggest you retire to your cabin and change your clothes as soon as possible. I know this jungle climate. It is not good to stand around wet.
Good advice, but I don't happen to have a cabin.
Well, in that case, permit me. My name is Flournoy. Please use my cabin.
Thanks.
Come, I will fetch your bag, monsieur.
Thanks, Henri.
Here we are, monsieur. A word of caution, monsieur.
What do you mean, Flournoy?
I know these river boats well. In the future, it would be much safer to leave your valuables with a captain.
Valuables?
Jewelry, perhaps? A diamond? An unofficial transaction? I have traveled this river for years. I know the types of business that flourish here.
Well, I've been taken for a lot of things in my day, but never a diamond runner.
Well, in any case, it is none of my business. I only wish to warn you to be careful.
I couldn't be more in agreement. Believe me, Flournoy.
Well, come in. Your suitcase, Monsieur Michel.
Thanks, Henri.
This attempt on your life, it upsets me greatly.
Me too.
In some way, I feel rather responsible for you.
How so?
Oh, because of our mutual friend you were with back on the dock.
Greg Carlson?
Yes, a most charming person.
Yeah. You know him long?
Oh, only since the Bergerot cocktail party of some 2 months ago. You see, Madame Bergerot, a dear friend of mine, invited me, and Greg Carlson, of course, was the guest of Mademoiselle.
Wait a minute. He was with Mademoiselle Bergerot?
Oh, yes. Madame's sister-in-law. Mademoiselle and Carlson at one time were rather interested in each other.
I see.
But alas, Mademoiselle has also many suitors beside Greg. He's not spoken of her lately. A broken romance, perhaps. We do not wish to speak of such things, eh?
Yeah, that's probably it. Changing to dry clothes, wondering why Greg didn't mention his friendship with Mademoiselle Bergerot. Could be the reason Henri came up with. On the other hand, could be something else. At dawn, we dock at the little river port of Saint-Carew. I go ashore and look up a guy whose name Greg has given me, a white hunter named Stryker. I hire him to take me to the Bergerot hunting lodge. An hour later, we're deep in the jungle.
The lodge isn't too much farther, Michel.
That's good. This is pretty rugged country, Stryker.
Yes, it's Mademoiselle Bergerot you want to see.
Yeah.
I'd that very much if she will be at the lodge.
Huh?
I saw her in Saint-Carew yesterday. She said something about trying to hunt in the Ifala country. That's to the west of here.
Think you could find them?
We shouldn't have any trouble tracking them. This is a fork of the trail we're coming to now. One branch leads toward the lodge, the other toward the Ifala country. We'll take the branch.
What is it?
It is strange. Quite a few tracks from the west heading for the lodge.
You think the hunting party came back?
Be an awfully short trip for them if they did. Let's stay here, Michel. I go along the trail a bit for a look-see.
Stryker disappears around the bend of the trail. I light a cigarette. Oop. My lighter slips out of my hand. Bend over to pick it up. The slug bounces off a rock beside me. I hit the dirt. A moment later, Stryker pounds into sight.
What happened, Michel?
Somebody trying to play bullseye.
Hey, I heard someone moving on the trail ahead of me just before the shot. Come on.
We start carefully along the trail. And I'm giving Stryker and his gun a few side glances. He could have done it. Then we round a bend in the trail, and there, right in front of us, is a woman with a rifle.
Stryker.
Well, it is Mademoiselle Bichereau.
I heard they shot, and I came back to investigate.
Huh?
I thought you had gone hunting in the Ifala country.
Well, we did. But two of the bearers were clawed rather badly. I canceled the trip, and we returned. We were almost to the lodge when I heard the shot. Was it either of you who fired it?
No. This is Steve Michel. He's been looking for you.
Saw me, must you?
Yeah. Here are my credentials.
Official agent. What do you want with me?
You and your sister-in-law own a piece of strategic mining property formerly leased to us.
Oh, yes.
The lease has expired, and we've been trying to renew it. But you and your sister seem to be involved in some sort of dispute and can't get together. That's why I'm here.
I see. Come, let us return to the lodge. This trouble between myself and Amalie...
That's your brother's widow?
Yes. It is idiotic, all of it. I've come to realize that more and more the last few days. Oh, foolish things, hurtful things were said by both of us. I personally would like to put an end to it, but that is up to her.
I see. There's a rumor that she's a phony, wasn't ever married to your brother.
I did not start a rumor, but I have heard it. I do not know what to think. When I received letters from my brother during the war, he mentioned a romance with Amalie. Then there was no news for some time, and finally a letter from Amalie telling me of my brother's death. She said they had been married shortly before.
Huh?
I invited her to live with me. I never questioned her story until the rumor started. Then I found it strange she could not produce the wedding certificate. She said she must have misplaced it.
Did it lurch on the head, Michel?
That looks like only old bear waiting there.
Why, yes, it is. Amalie's friend.
Ah, we meet again, Monsieur Michel.
So we do, Henri.
Monsieur Michel has come to try and catch up the family feud, Henri.
Oh? Then we have the same purpose, Monsieur.
Do we?
Yes. That is why I have made the trip up here. To do what I could to settle the difference between Celeste here and Amalie. This trouble has gone on long enough.
Well, I'm afraid you didn't do so well settling your friend Amalie's trouble.
Oh. What do you mean?
You lent her your car.
Of course.
She had an accident.
What?
Only it wasn't an accident. The steering rod had been sawed almost through.
What? This is incredible.
Was she hurt badly?
No, she's going to be all right. This comes as a big surprise to both of you, apparently.
But of course. I suggest we return to her immediately.
Yes, at once.
We start back along the trail to St. Carew. Stryker leads the way, Celeste is next. Henri follows her, and I bring up the rear. Then I hear a few faint crackles of brush behind us. Somebody's following. I let the others go on ahead without saying anything. I slip to one side and hide in the brush. After a moment, a figure with a gun slips into sight. I let him get close, and I lunge at him and knock the gun out of his hand.
Oh, what did you do?
Oh, my friend Flournoy from the riverboat.
Michel.
Suddenly he jerks a knife out and lunges at me, but I lock his wrist and bend it back. He slips away from me. He slips and falls. Flournoy. But he doesn't answer. He's fallen right onto his own knife. He'll never answer anyone again. I search him, but the only item of interest is a key to a hotel room in St. Carew. I figure Flournoy was just a hired killer, and maybe this key will tell me who hired him. I head to St. Carew and find the hotel whose name is on the key. It's a cheap dive near the waterfront. I go upstairs and start down the dimly lit hall toward the room on the key. But I don't quite make it. Someone steps out of the shadows. I feel something in my back. A gun, and I hear a voice soft in my ear.
That is far enough, Michel.
I know the voice, but for the moment I don't quite tie it up to the owner. So I decide to make more conversation quickly. So you're the big boy behind the deal.
That's right.
I imagine you've got a tidy sum for stirring up trouble between the two women, just to block our lease renewal.
It was made well worth my while. Let's go into the room. Gun will not stand.
Oh, let's talk a little first. Why did you try to kill the widow?
He was after someone else, not her.
Henri? You wanted to kill him because he was trying to patch up the quarrel between the two women?
You're very smart, Michel.
You also hired Flournoy to get rid of me, didn't you? And, what did you intend to do with Flournoy afterwards?
He was to be paid off with a bullet. The bullet I am going to let you have. Now let's get into the room.
I walk toward the door. I'm pretty sure now who's behind me holding the gun. But I'm not quite sure how I'm going to dodge that bullet he's promised me. He told me to unlock the door.
Inside. Not too far.
I take a step in. A street lamp outside makes the room a little brighter than the passageway. Out of the corner of my eye, I see his hand reach up to the light switch just inside the door. Move quickly, kick the door back. The shot goes wide. The door bounces back off his wrist, and I jump in. He suddenly relaxes. I figure he's not very interested anymore. Feel around, find the gun, switch on the light. Well, well. Mr. Van Leeuwen, the big trust lawyer. Wait till the ladies find out you're the one who's been stirring up trouble. I don't think we'll have much trouble getting a renewal of the lease then.
My wrist.
That door slammed shut on a lot more than your wrist, Van Leeuwen.
What do you mean?
Your future, Buster. Your future.
Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Dangerous Assignment, untuned to yesterday from NBC, heard on February 11th, 1953. It's an hour of adventure shows from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And next on Tune 2 Yesterday, the Clyde Beatty Show, with an episode called Daniel and the Lion's Den. It's circus adventure from 1950 in the syndicated broadcast.
The Clyde Beatty Show. The world's greatest wild animal trainer, Clyde Beatty, with another exciting story from his brilliant career. This master of the big cats captures ferocious jungle beasts and trains them to perform under the big top in the circus, where there are always thrills, action, and danger. Hundreds of dramatic behind-the-scenes adventures are all part of the Clyde Beatty story. Here is the story of Daniel in the Lion's Den.
Hey, you over there. Where do you think you're going?
Me? You talking to me, mister?
No, I'm talking to you. What are you doing hanging around the animal grottos?
Just looking. Boy, these cats are Mr. Beatty's.
Our beauties.
Yeah, you ain't supposed to be on the grounds. This ain't a visiting day. We're closed to the public.
Oh, I'm not the public.
No? Then what are you?
I'm an animal trainer.
Animal trainer, huh? What's your name?
Donato. Alberto Donato. But they call me Dan.
I know everybody in the business. Never heard of you.
Oh, you will, someday.
Yeah, I can hardly wait. Now, suppose you just get off the grounds.
Suppose I don't.
I'll throw you off.
Oh, now take it easy, old man.
Old man? Why, you young punk,
I'm sorry. I guess I shouldn't have said that.
Get out of here! Beat it!
Please, I didn't mean to be a smart aleck.
I don't care what you meant. If you aren't going in 1 minute, I...
What's the trouble, Max? Something wrong?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Beatty.
Why, Beatty?
I caught this young fellow fooling around the grottos. I told him the grounds are closed today.
Gee, I didn't mean to cause any trouble, Mr. Beatty. I just thought I might get a chance to talk to you.
He was being mighty fresh.
Okay, Max, okay. I'll handle this.
Smart young punk. Pay a man to watch things around here. Tired to do my duty, everybody pushes.
Well, young fella, looks like you and old Max didn't get along too well.
Oh, golly, Mr. Beatty, I didn't mean to cause any trouble for the old boy. I'm awful sorry.
Max is a bit short-tempered. I guess when the weather's wrong, his old bones start to ache. Well, what can I do for you?
I'm an animal trainer, Mr. Beatty.
You're kind of young, aren't you?
Well, not exactly a full-fledged trainer yet, but I want to be.
Why?
Why? Oh, gosh, why wouldn't I?
I could give you plenty of reasons.
Oh, you must be joking. You're the greatest trainer in the world. You must like him.
Oh, I like it all right, but sometimes I wonder why.
Yeah. Must be something that gets under our skin, eh, Mr. Beatty?
Must be.
Not that I'm in your class or anything like that, but, well, you know what I mean.
I think so. Now, tell me, why have you come to me?
Well, I want a job, Mr. Beatty. Any kind of job, just so I can be near the cats.
I'm afraid I don't need anybody right now.
Oh, please. I'll do anything, sir. Anything.
When the circus is in winter quarters, we keep the staff down to absolute minimum.
Mr. Beatty, I'll work hard. I want to watch you learn all I can.
Well,
my last boss, he let me work his cats. They were old and tired. Didn't learn very much.
You say you've worked the cats?
Yes, sir. Oh, but not like yours. Oh, please give me a chance, Mr. Beatty. Someday I'll be a real trainer, you'll see.
Yes, or you might turn out to be like old Max.
The old man? What's he got to do with this?
You're too young to remember, but once there was a trainer called the Great Maximilian. Believe me, he was great.
That crippled old man was a famous animal trainer?
One of the best.
What happened?
The thing that happens to guys foolish enough to fool around the big cats. One performance, he made a mistake. Just a little mistake. 2 years later, they finished patching him up and let him out of the hospital.
Gee, I didn't realize. I wish I hadn't been so fresh.
I learned plenty from that old man. That's why I feel I should help him when he's out of luck.
Mr. Beatty, do you think the Great Maximilian might coach me? Or maybe even you would.
Still want to be a trainer, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, don't say I didn't warn you.
You mean you'll give me a job?
I shouldn't. You'd be better off if I just threw you off the grounds, but it must be something that gets under our skin, huh?
You're pulling my leg.
Sure. But just see you don't let one of my cats do it.
Oh, don't worry about that, Mr. Beatty. Gee, sir, I'm really grateful to you.
Don't mention it. Say, what's your name, son?
Donato. Look, they call me Dan.
Dan, huh?
Yeah.
Den. That's a fine name for a guy who wants to climb into the lion's den.
And now, back to Clyde Beatty's adventure entitled Daniel in the Lion's Den. The only one I could remember more difficult to discourage from a career in the animal arena than young Donato was a certain eager character from Chillicothe named Clyde Beatty. I couldn't be too tough on the kid because I remembered being just as eager and just as cocksure. I was planning to leave winter quarters for a week or so on business, so I decided to give young Dan a few lessons on fundamentals. Dan, there's one thing I never want you to forget. Now, Mrs. Beatty will verify this. Any one of those big cats is capable of tearing you to shreds, and they'd like nothing better than a chance to do it. Is that right, dear?
Absolutely, Clyde. You see, Dan, some people get the mistaken notion that wild beasts can be made into pets.
But some people do make them into pets, don't they?
That's not very wise. That's when they're most dangerous. No matter how well you think you know a wild animal, you can never know when it's going to turn on you.
Gee, my former boss kind of made pets of his cats.
You say this boss of yours taught you fundamentals?
A few.
Well, here, let me see you handle the tools of the trade. There's a whip, a gun, and a chair.
Well, you hold both the chair and the gun like this, in the left hand, and the whip in your right hand. Now, sometimes if you want a free hand to use a stick or move something, you sling the whip over your shoulders, around the back of your neck like this.
Good. Now, move over there and let's see how you'd work. How do you like the boy, honey?
He's very nice. But Clyde, that boy handles himself awfully well.
He seems to be a natural. He must have been telling the truth about having handled a few cats. It's good, Dan. Now let's see you faint with a chair. Show me how you'd handle a charging cat.
Okay, Mr. Beatty.
Footwork seems pretty rough. He could stand some practice on that.
That'd help him a lot. Yeah. Dan, now the cat's charging. Blank him, blank him. Not bad. You know, I think I'll try him in the arena with one of the cats.
Do you think that's a good idea, Clyde?
I want to see how he reacts. I'll be standing by. That'll do, son. Come on back here.
Oh, was I all right, Mr. Beatty?
Fair, fair. At least you know how to use your equipment. Your footwork's plenty rusty, though.
Oh?
Would you like to get in the training arena with one of the cats, Dan?
No.
Why not?
Sure, let's go.
Take it easy, not so fast. Oh, Eddie! Eddie!
Yes, Mr. Beatty?
Let Bobby in the arena. We want to work him a bit.
Yes, sir.
Eddie, the cage boy, is going to let one of the smaller cats into the arena. He's a rough one, and he's tough.
Oh, I'll watch you, Mr. Beatty.
Don't let him think you're afraid, or he'll charge you. He's a sly critter, watches every move you make.
Huh? I see.
Huh? Here he is.
I thought you said he was small.
If you think he's big, wait till you see Nero.
Cat's ready, Mr. Beatty.
Okay, Eddie. Now, don't worry, Dan. I'll be right here in the safety cage if anything happens. Just be sure to keep on your feet, okay?
Okay.
All right, let's get into the safety cage.
Well, Mr. Beatty, here I go.
Now, wait a minute.
Huh? What's the matter?
Now, don't tell me you were going to go dashing in the arena just like that.
Is something wrong?
Close your eyes.
Close my eyes? Okay, they're closed.
Now, tell me everything that's in that arena.
Well, there's a lion, of course, and...
Open your eyes, Dan. Now, take a look. What do you see besides a 500,000 pounds of cat on the hoof?
Well, the pedestal over on the left.
Yeah?
And a wooden hurdle leaning way over against the bars on the right.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I guess that's all.
Right. If you'd have gone in there, you might have stumbled over one of them. You'd have been in trouble.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Never go into an arena without memorizing the position of every piece of equipment.
Yes, sir. I understand.
Good. All right, go on in and give Bobby some exercise. Well, don't just stand there. Go to work on him, Dan.
Clyde. Clyde, I don't like the way the boy's handling himself.
Oh, he'll be all right, Harriet.
His movement's too jerky. Bobby knows he's not too sure of himself.
I know. I'm watching closely. I don't want to alarm the youngster. I'll try to correct him without getting him confused. You're doing fine, Dan, but you're too stiff. Don't jerk. Move easily. Watch it.
Bobby smacked the chair out of his hand. Dan's off the gun.
Don't bend over for that gun. Crack your whip, Dan. Crack your whip. Bobby's stalking him. I'd better get in there. Out of the way, Dan. Back, Bobby. Back. Back. All right, Dan, hit the safety cage. Get back, you devil. Eddie, open the chute. I'm sending Bobby out.
Right, Mr. Beatty.
Go on. Get over there. Get in that chute. You all right, Dan?
Yes, I didn't do so well. Oh, Mr. Beatty.
You were fine. Just a bit stiff, is that?
You made a couple of mistakes out there, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I guess I got quite a few things to learn.
That's right. But I'll teach you all you have to know.
You mean you're not going to wash me out?
Oh, no. When you learn how to use those big flat feet of yours, I'll make an animal trainer out of you, and a good one, too.
Hey, you, boy. You sure got them cages swept out yet?
Just about, Mr. Maximilian. There, that'll do it.
Yeah. What about the rest of your chores?
Well, I've cleaned all the cages, cut the fresh meat, filled the water pans. Guess I'm about through.
Oh, no, you ain't. There's still plenty I can find for you to do.
Don't strain yourself. I'm tired.
When you came here, you asked for work. I'm going to see you get it.
Oh, golly. You're still sore at me, Mr. Maximilian. I'm sorry I acted like that way I did the first day. I wish we could be friends.
Ain't got time for that kind of stuff. Too much to do around here.
Mr. Beatty said he learned plenty from you.
That's right. He was my cage boy once.
I sure wish Mr. Beatty'd get back. Might want another crack of those cats.
Beatty'll be back soon enough. Too soon to please me.
I've practiced every day since he's been gone. Been practicing on my footwork.
Footwork? Bah.
Well, don't you think it's
Look,
important?
I was the best in the business. Did I ever practice footwork? Sissy stuff, I call it.
Oh, it helps your coordination.
Coordination bunk. All you got to learn is how to smash them cats around, make them know who's boss.
Sure, but there's lots...
You got to bluff them. Bluff them to a standstill.
Well, Mr. Beatty says the best weapon a trainer has is bluff,
It's the only weapon. Them cats wasn't so dumb. They'd know a man ain't got a chance against them.
But Mr. Beatty says...
Mr. Beatty says... Look, you... I've forgotten more than Beatty will ever know. When you're out in that arena with a bunch of milling cats, you ain't got time to think about all that fancy stuff. You got to whip and beat them critters into doing what you want. If one of them gets out of line, bam, give him the works.
That's not the way Mr. Beatty does it.
A smart guy, too. A wiseacre like yourself. Just because he tells you you've got a chance in this business, you think he's a great guy.
He is a great guy.
Oh, yeah? Then why... Ain't he had you out there with a ring full of cats?
Oh, he doesn't think I'm ready yet.
Or maybe he thinks you're so ready, you'll soon be better than him.
Oh, now that isn't true
Look,
at
youngster,
all.
You're as ready as you'll ever be.
You mean, do you think I could handle an arena full of cats?
If you do what I tell you, you can.
Well, now,
Well, what's the matter? Beatty taking all the spunk out of you?
Oh, no, Mr. Maximilian. But he gave me strict orders not to work any of the animals till he got back.
Orders? Holy. There's only one way to find out if you've got what it takes. Get out there and work with a dozen of the critters.
Gee,
what's the matter? You yellow?
No. But, well, Mr. Beatty said...
Okay, do what Mr. Beatty says. But I'm telling you, you'll never get to be a trainer if you do.
You aren't jealous of Mr. Beatty, are you?
Jealous? Me jealous of him? I could still teach him plenty. You too, if I thought you had the guts.
What do you want me to do?
Now, I'll tell you. There's only one way. Either you got what it takes, or you ain't. I'll turn a dozen cats in that arena.
A hot, tiresome trip, Clyde. It's going to feel good to get back to Fort Lauderdale again.
Business is business, honey. And I'll admit, I'm glad we're back, too.
Well, there's the place. Oh, doesn't it look beautiful?
Terrific. The men have done a swell job of landscaping the grottos and the animal enclosures.
The visitors certainly get a kick out of seeing the animals outside their cages, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, look at all the cars in the parking lot. We must have an extra large crowd today.
Hey, we've had record crowds all season, but I've never seen this many in the middle of the week.
Maybe they think you're going to work out the cats.
No, I posted notices saying the exhibitions were to be canceled for a while.
Well, anyway, there's a mob here today. Look, they're all gathered there around the exhibition arena.
Yeah, that's funny. Why would there be anyone around the arena unless...
Right. Someone is working the animals for this crowd.
Well, that's impossible. I left orders for exhibitions to be canceled until we got back.
Well, somebody's putting on a show.
Come on.
Yes.
Let's go. Eddie, what's going on here?
Mr. Beatty, we didn't expect you till tomorrow.
I said, what's going on here?
Well, it's like this. Oh, Max, well...
Don't tell me that's young Dan in there with all those cats.
I'm afraid it is, Mr. Beatty. I tried to stop
that
him.
That crazy young fool. He's not ready for that.
Oh, Clyde, he'll be killed.
And now, back to Clyde Beatty and his exciting story called Daniel in the Lion's Den.
The exhibition arena at our Fort Lauderdale winter quarters was jam-packed with visitors. In complete disregard of my strict orders, my apprentice trainer Dan was putting a group of mixed lions and tigers through their paces. All right, what's the meaning of this, Eddie?
I tried to stop him, Mr. Beatty.
Them?
Oh, Max and that young fella.
You mean Max put that boy up to this?
Yeah. He told the kid the practice you were putting him through was a lot of bunk.
Well, what could his purpose be, sending a green kid in there?
You better get in that arena, Mr. Beatty. That youngster can't handle all them cats.
Well, hand me a whip and a gun.
Here you are.
If that boy makes one mistake,
should I open the chute and let them cats out?
No. No, wait. Say, that kid's doing all right.
I don't know. Them cats is plenty feisty. Haven't been worked for a long time.
Well, the boy's doing a good job.
Oh, my gosh. He's finally got them cats toeing the line.
Eddie, that boy's got a future in this business. Dan.
Yes, sir.
I've got a big investment in this outfit.
I know, sir.
What you did this afternoon could have wound up in a terrible tragedy.
I shouldn't have listened to Mr. Maximilian.
If you'd been hurt or killed, I'd have felt responsible.
I'll do anything to prove how sorry I am, sir.
Your only excuse is that you felt you were taking advice from an older and more experienced man.
Well, don't blame Mr. Maximilian, sir. I should have known better.
Old Max is bitter. He resents me, and he's probably jealous of you.
You don't think he wanted me to be killed?
No. But he did want to show you up, and in doing so, show me up, too.
I see.
Well, it's all over.
You mean I'm through?
I mean you're going to be a great trainer, but you'll have to prove to me that I can trust you.
Oh, yes, sir.
Until further orders from me, you're not to go near any of the animals. Is that clear?
Well, I'd rather be sent to bed without my supper for a year, Mr. Beatty. But it's clear.
Is that you, Clyde?
Yes, honey.
What did you do about young Dan?
Oh, gave him a lecture.
You didn't fire him, did you?
No.
Oh. What about Max?
I had a talk with him. He said the boy begged to be allowed in the arena.
Do you think that's true?
No.
What did you say?
I was in a spot, honey.
But Max deliberately endangered that youngster.
Appears so. He wanted to hurt me through the boy. He resents us both.
You should let Max go. He might cause trouble again.
But I just can't fire him, honey.
Sometimes being sentimental can be dangerous.
I'll keep an eye on him.
Oh, Clyde Beatty, you're a hopeless idealist, a sentimentalist, and...
A jerk.
Yes, but I love you.
Mr. Maximilian, what are you doing up there?
What's it to you?
Gosh, I don't think you should be up there on that railing.
If I waited for a squirt like you to patch this broken guardrail, some of them visitors would be falling into this lion grotto.
Yeah, but the way you're balanced up there, you're liable to fall in.
You trying to tell me what to do?
Oh, no, but please let me do that job for you.
I want it fixed right. You go about your business.
Well, I just thought I could help you.
Hey, Ken, could you come over here a minute?
Huh? Okay, Eddie, I'll be right there. Sure I can't help you, Mr. Maximilian?
Come on, beat it.
Okay, but if you need help, just sing out. Yes, Eddie?
How about giving me a hand? Oh. Here, Dan.
What's the deal?
Got to move these here cases over to that shed.
Okay. Hold it steady. I'll take this in.
What
was that? Max! It was Max! He must have fallen!
Here, through here.
I knew he shouldn't be up on that fence.
Where is he?
Max! Max! He's fallen into the grotto!
Them cats! They're all gathering around!
They'll tear him to shreds in a minute!
Dan, what are you doing?
Here. Give me a hand. If we can rip off a hunk of this guardrail, I'll have something to work with.
Work with?
I'm going down there to help the old man. There! This will make a good club.
You can't go down there alone! Hey, wait! That's an 18-foot drop! Dan! Dan, look out! They got a gang up on you!
The old man's passed off! I'm trying to get to him.
It's no use, Dan. The cats are closing in on him.
Beat him.
Get out. Get out while you got a chance.
Quick. Quick. Go get some help.
Crazy kid. Hurry, Mr. Beatty. Hurry.
Well, what happened, Eddie?
Max fell into the grotto. The cats ganged up on him. Then Dan jumped in.
You mean to tell me Dan's down there?
Yeah, it was just a piece of rail for a club. He was fighting like a demon when I left.
Well, look, the cats are milling around the base of that mound of rocks on the other side of the grotto. Dan, are you there?
Here I am.
He's standing over the old man.
One of the cats must have tried to drag Max into that small cave.
Yeah, the boy must have beat him off.
Dan, how are you doing?
I think I can hold him off a while yet.
As long as his back's against those rocks, he's got a chance.
If the cats don't decide to climb that mound and get above him. There goes the tiger now. It's crawling up the rocks. Dan, hold out, boy. I'll be down there in a minute.
Don't come down. It's no use, Mr. Baby. There are too many of them.
Hold on. Keep wailing away at them.
What are you going to do, Mr. Baby?
It'll take too long to fight through that gang of cats from here. Come on.
Where?
I've got to drop down on that mound from the other side. Then jump to the floor of the grotto where Dan is.
I hope you'll make it before that tiger.
Eddie, toss me that length of 2x4 over there.
Here you are. Now what? It's a 15-foot drop to that ledge.
Yeah, I don't want to break a leg when I drop. Here, you hold on to this end of the board.
What are you going
to
do?
Skin down and then drop.
Right. Oh, it's too late. The tiger's made it to the top. He's directly above Dan.
Just hang out of that board.
Don't go down there. He ain't got nothing to fight with.
When I'm down, drop the board. I'll use that. How are you doing down there, Dan?
Okay. Thanks for getting that tiger off my neck.
Try to clear a space for me. I'll drop down and take over for you.
Okay. Back, you devil! Back!
Eddie, get some rope crossing in down here.
Right, boss. Need guns or anything?
No, Dan and I will hold him till we can haul old Max out.
Hurry, Mr. Beatty. Hurry!
Make some room in your lion's den, Daniel. I'm coming down.
Gentlemen, I can't tell you what it means to me to have been selected to present this distinctive merit award to an heroic and deserving young hero. Step up here, Dan.
Yes, sir.
Come on, up front here.
Yes, sir.
It is a great thrill for me to present to you Alberto Donato, this award from the citizens of Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Mr. Beatty. Thanks, all of you.
Here, take it, you dope.
Yeah, but I just want to get off this stage. I'm scared.
Well, come on, then. Oh, I'm proud of you, Dan. Really proud.
Oh, thanks. Golly, thanks for everything, Mr. Beatty.
Mr. Beatty, Dan.
Hello, Max.
I want you to accept the thanks of a foolish old man.
Oh, I'm glad you could come to this shindig.
I wouldn't have missed it for anything. Dan, I just wanted to say thanks to you for saving my life.
Well, I'm sure glad you're all right again, Mr. Maximilian.
And I wanted to tell you, you're going to be a great animal man someday. Maybe even as good as the greatest of us all, Clyde Beatty.
Beatty, with a preview of our next adventure.
It isn't often that I go hunting for an animal with the idea of killing it. But a couple of years ago, I went to Alaska intent upon putting an end to a giant bear that was creating havoc in the Matanuska Valley, slaughtering livestock and people. You'll hear the exciting hunt for the Kodiak killer when next we meet.
All stories are based upon incidents in the career of the world-famous Clyde Beatty and the Clyde Beatty Circus.
The Clyde Beatty Show, on Tuned to Yesterday, well-known ringmaster of the period, that episode from 1950. And that wraps this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the Golden Age of Radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBunier. It's been a pleasure.